Hi there, I'm Peter Gilmore and you're listening to the Crest of the Wave podcast from RYA Northern Ireland. My guest this week is an esteemed judge and umpire. Chris Lindsay started out at Carrickfergus Sailing Club, but has now risen to the dizzy heights of SailGP events and the Olympic Games. Despite handing me my fair share of red flags on the university team racing circuit, I can confirm that above all, Chris is foremost an absolutely lovely guy. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Chris, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. I often start by asking people how they are, but I suppose in this instance, you've just been selected to be a judge at Paris 2024. You must be on cloud nine.
Yeah, great to be with you. Definitely feeling very excited. It's like some good news, I think. It's kind of funny that I've known since kind of October, so it's been a couple of months now and not been able to tell anybody. So it's nice now, nice now that the final list has gone up, I'm able to let you know, which is great. So yeah, very exciting.
Where were you and how did it feel at the time?
I was at work, actually, and it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon or something, and I just got...
So a slightly weird feeling, you can't tell anyone in the office, so how are you, Chris?
Yeah,
I'm good, thanks.
Like, oh, yeah, that's exciting. I think I did tell my boss, actually, who was sitting opposite me at the time.
Yeah, presumably you could tell your parents.
Yeah, I did, yeah, exactly, but... It was sworn secrecy otherwise.
they must be absolutely delighted. You've said to me before, it's the best hobby in the world.
Definitely.
Why is that so?
Because I get to travel, I get to meet the most wonderful people from all across the world. I've gotten to do lots of events that, you know, I'd never be able to compete at in a million years, but yeah, I can go to as an official. It's interesting, you get the adrenaline rush. And then it's, you know, I have my normal job on the side as well, so it's a nice kind of break from that, definitely.
Because how did you get, first of all, into umpiring and judging just, you know, at the real genesis stage? Because, you know, for some people it might be quite an alien concept.
So I started out volunteering at my local club, which was Carrick Sailing Club. I think I was like 13 or 14 actually, so I was very, very young, when someone just asked me, are you free tomorrow to help run the club racing, so run it from the club battery, which I did, and kind of got into doing that for a little bit. I went to one of the RYA's courses, became a qualified race officer. I think after that, then decided, much to Rob and Gray's disgust, I think, they decided that risk management wasn't for me and that I would rather become a judge and be involved in that side of the sport. Got into doing some team racing at university, which was great fun, and that's very rulesy, so you really do need to know the rules and be on top of your tactics. And same again, really, with that. Someone just said, oh, we need more people to volunteer to become umpires, and I just did that at one event, and that's kind of spiraled out of control.
And what was it really which drew you to the umpiring and judging? Because in some ways, I suppose, you know, I've had a lot of interactions with judges and umpires for, well, good and bad reasons over the years. But in some ways, you sort of break the mold in that you're much younger than a lot of them. What age are you?
I'm 30.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of judges and umpires would, by the nature of things, be kind of into their 60s, maybe even 70s, and they've finished sailing themselves and look at it as a way to still stay involved with the sport. Why did you choose to go down the judging and the umpiring route rather than do so much sailing yourself?
I really like the adrenaline rush that it gives. So you as an umpire have to go on the water, you're there with the sailors, so you're normally in a rib behind them, watching the sailing. You have to be in a good position to answer their protests, so when they disagree on how the rules apply, they're going to be looking to you, and you probably have a couple of seconds to make a decision, and you're just going to have to just going to have to decide something. And that's a real adrenaline rush. When you start doing the higher level competitions, you know, you get off the water and you're like, oh, that was fun. So that's definitely for me something I really enjoyed from doing that, the kind of pressure and adrenaline. And it's very technical, which appealed to me as well. And then as you get, you know, get your qualifications and you move to sort of international level, you get to do lots of competitions outside the country. I've made a really lovely network of friends from all over the world that do it. And I think the stereotype is that it's sort of all these old fellas that do it, you know, when they're retired, which to some extent was true, but that's definitely changing. And especially now, you know, when you look at the Olympic jury, like, there would be a lot of people that are the same age as me. It's not.
There's a lot of women coming into it as well.
Yeah, so the Olympic jury will be 50-50, men and women, which is great. And there's a huge push to try and make officiating more diverse. And at an international level, that is definitely happening. So it definitely doesn't look like it did 20 or 30 years ago, which is awesome.
Another thing I was going to ask you about was, you know, that pressure side of things. Do you feel pressure? Because it's something I often think about from a sailor's perspective. When it's a bigger race or a bigger competition, I would feel an elevated level of pressure. But you spoke about in the rib there, when you're following a start in and you're watching to see, okay, I'm going to have to make a call in a matter of seconds. Are you aware that this is the Olympics and I do have to get this especially right?
Absolutely. You definitely feel the pressure as an umpire at any event, because you do have to make a decision in a couple of seconds. The Olympics will be very special in the sense that you're on the water and you have lots of helicopters, you'll have lots of TV boats around watching your every move. You'll be very aware that every decision you make can affect a medal. So yeah, you absolutely feel the pressure. At the last Olympics in Tokyo, one of my jobs was to be what's called the digital ITO, and part of that role was to explain to the media the umpire decisions that were made. And I have never felt as sick in my entire life as I did sitting doing that, when the TV director was telling you I typically had 3 seconds notice that I was going to have to start speaking, and you have to immediately think about what we're going to say, how we're going to explain this. And just,
I think,
yeah,
I'm feeling a little bit sick of my stomach hearing that as well.
Yeah, so in some
sense. And I'm meant to be the one that loves the media as well.
Yeah, so that was definitely, I felt some pressure there for sure.
Yeah.
But that's just part of the job, really.
You spoke there about the digital ITO. There's lots of different types of kind of umpire and jury and judge. Just to get a little bit technical for a second, what are the distinctions between a judge, a jury, and an umpire, just so people can be clear in their head?
No problem. So all of these different qualifications have in common that you are deciding disputes between the sailors when they don't agree on what the rules are. So sailors go in the water and they have an incident and they need somebody to resolve it, and it just depends on how you're doing that. So as a judge, you're typically hearing protests ashore, so that's kind of how it works in most sailing. One sailor comes into the room and tells you what they think happened, and the other sailor says what they think happened, and typically they're disagreeing. You might hear witnesses or whatever, and then you make a decision based on the rules. Someone might be disqualified, but you're doing that ashore after the racing has happened. As an umpire, you go on the water and you're making the decisions in real time. Generally you're on the water. We've got sort of like electronic umpiring now, which is changing things, but that's umpiring is live. So while the race is happening, you're making decisions, and really the reason we do that is so that at the end of the race everybody knows who the winner is.
So that's boat on boat.
Yes.
So you're giving kind of red and green flags, generally penalty or no penalty.
Exactly. So typically green is no penalty, and then we can give boats 1 or 2 turn penalties or whatever the rules are for that event.
There's a bit more to it than that, but there's, yeah, there's, that's a simplified version, really.
You've never seen a red flag, I'm sure.
Would never be me. he laughs across the table, having given me many every year. But at Paris 2024, you'll be an on the water judge. So you'll be officiating over Rule 42. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. So the job really will be to go on the water during the racing. So typically the judges will go on and follow all of the fleets, probably with the exception of the kites, because they're just too fast. And we'll
so
be,
Rule 42, that's illegal propulsion.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be looking for, there are certain body actions that are prohibited in the way you propel the boat. So we'll be looking for things like body pumping, rocking, sculling, that sort of thing. Every class has a different set of rules that they apply, and we watch for that, and then we can give penalties if we see that. The penalties are a little bit different because they kind of escalate. You get two turns initially, and then it becomes you have to retire. So it's quite a draconian penalty, and you're very aware of that as well. But yeah, that's the job during the day. And then later on ashore, hearing all the protests, and then we get to the medal race.
That's your panel of juries. We were discussing earlier the distinctions between the different terms.
Yeah, exactly. So the protests will all be heard by panels of five judges. They'll all be internationally qualified. Each will be from a different country. And typically none of the judges on the panel will be from the country.
And that makes up a jury.
Yeah, exactly. So the full jury is 26 people, and we normally sit in panels of five to make a decision.
So what will your prep look like in the lead up to the games?
It's a good question. So a lot of preparation, actually. Not quite like the athletes, in the sense we're not having to work on our fitness, thankfully. But we'll be trying to make sure, at least for me, that I'm up to speed on all the rules for the different classes. So obviously there's the main racing rules of sailing that everyone's familiar with, but each class has its own set of interpretations, especially around Rule 42, what the rules are for each class. There's really nobody.
Some classes allow it in certain wind conditions,
and you have now got in Paris the IQ foil, so the sort of foiling board. We've got the kites, which have a completely different set of rules, and you need to be familiar with all of them, even if they're not classes that you necessarily work with all the time. So for me, it's going to be like getting my head around the rules for those classes, because when you go, I will end up on panels here in protests from any class. So I do need to be.
And will you know which race course you're going to end up on?
Probably I'll find out the morning or the night before which race courses I'll be on. So typically, of the 26 judges, there will be one assigned as the class lead for each class. Somebody will be in charge of the Ilka, somebody will be in charge of the 49er. If that is me, then I'll find that out in advance. But otherwise, all the other judges rotate, so I can be on any class on any given day. And there won't be much time to look up what the rules are.
That's pressure in itself.
Yeah, so you just need to be ready. And there, you would not believe the number of documents and things that, you know, the equipment rules, the coach regulations, the equipment rules. There's so much stuff to be familiar with that it's going to be a lot of reading between now and next summer.
Yeah, I'd rather you than me, mate.
But
at the same time, something huge to look forward to. You spoke previously about Tokyo and your experiences through that. And obviously Tokyo, it was actually not Tokyo 2020, it was Tokyo 2021 because it was held during the COVID pandemic. What was that experience like? It was obviously a bit weird for you.
It was very surreal, I have to say. And I mean, so obviously it was held in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, and that changed a lot of things. In particular, so when we were there, we were only allowed to be at the hotel or at the sailing venue, literally nowhere else. And we were walked each morning from the hotel to a bus that took us straight to the venue and through this kind of airport security.
Could you even sit beside anyone?
On the bus, yes. But I mean, we weren't allowed. I mean, like, people would walk away from you on the street as we were walking to the bus.
That's rubbish crack.
We, yeah, and, like, dinner each night was Uber Eats to the hotel, which is very difficult to do in Japanese, let me tell you. You don't speak the language. So that was a challenge. We were basically... Yeah. So I didn't see any of Japan.
I would like some sushi.
Yeah. So I didn't see anything of Japan at all. But I mean, once we were inside the Olympic venue, it was sort of like normal life. You wore a mask and you're pretty much allowed to interact with everybody. But even then, our interactions with the sailors were totally limited. You know, we had all these sort of, the judges were all isolated away from the athletes, except when we had hearings and things, and they would come in one side of the room and we would come in the other, and we had like a glass screen in between. It was very weird.
But this time around, it'll hopefully be all completely normal.
Yeah.
Will you go to the opening ceremony?
I don't know, actually. We'll see.
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, you spoke there about interactions with some of the athletes. Are there any athletes you're hoping to see? Any, you know, particularly famous athletes? Maybe it's just me, but I'd definitely be fangirling over a few.
I probably shouldn't say anything publicly. I mean, obviously, it's a small world, and you see a lot of the same people. A lot of the sailors from CLGP, which is another series I'm involved in, will be there competing at different classes, and you know everyone. The strangest thing for me, actually, is a lot of my friends from the kind of judge and umpire world have become rules advisors for various countries.
Sure.
And I will not even be allowed to speak to them. So people that I've known for years, I have to kind of avoid bumping into them by myself and think there's a lot of rules that go on top of the Olympics that make it strange. So there'll be a lot of familiar faces there, and you just have to be very, sort of very careful, making sure you don't kind of, like, I can't be sitting with all the Irish sailors kind of hanging out, sort of thing. So
yeah,
it's a very different world.
It's a once in every 4 year experience where you get that opportunity to go and mix and meet new people. But you touched there about your experiences with SailGP. It's another big thing you do. For those people maybe listening who haven't seen SailGP, it's a really modern form of sailing, hydrofoiling catamarans, which go 80 kilometers an hour. It's about as bonkers as sailing gets. It's probably the best way to put it. But you have been an umpire for that. But the umpiring is done in a pretty unique way. Do you want to explain a bit about that?
Yeah, so SailGP is very special in that the umpiring is done remotely, using sort of very accurate tracking technology and video. And in fact, pretty much all of the umpires are based in London. So no matter where the event is around the world, I mean, we've just done Dubai, the next event is Abu Dhabi, we will all be in London in a small room in Ealing, next to the commentators, next to a lot of the technical people. Most of the series is in Ealing, in London, which is obviously very different. Some of the umpires even work remotely, so from home. So there's one umpire that works from Poland and one from Portugal, and we, through the wonders of technology, you know, can sit and speak to them as if they're sitting next to us. We can watch the boats from the helicopters and the tracking, and we are making the decisions from London, which is very strange.
that is cutting edge technology, but I mean, we touched on earlier a little bit about pressure. I'd be just nervous my Wi-Fi wouldn't crash in the middle of it. Sometimes when we're having a Teams call at work, my Wi-Fi crashes. It's a bit lower stakes, though, if Tom Singsby's doing a hook pre-start.
No, exactly.
And he's trying to take out Pete Burley, and you can't just go, sorry, Pete, my connection's just a bit slow today.
No, exactly. And luckily, they seem to have sorted that out. The biggest difference for me, actually, is sort of trying to not drive myself mad. So with CLGP, you can rewind the tracking over and over and over. So you can replay the incident as many times as you want. And you can give a penalty at the time, and then you spend the rest of the day rewinding it, and you can convince yourself, actually, that shouldn't have been a penalty or whatever. Whereas in most other umpiring, you just see the incident once from wherever you were. You don't have a video to rewind and look back at. So it's avoiding avoiding driving yourself crazy, which can be hard.
Because presumably you've umpired and judged for years. You have made mistakes. You're a human being. have there been any times where you've really, I'm not asking you to name the specific time, because the sailor involved might be listening, but have you really struggled after the incident to deal with, I have made a mistake in the call?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've definitely made some mistakes over the years. I can think of one in particular that I always go back to, which is I was doing a very high level match race event. So it was a grade one, and it was in the semi-finals. And I don't know if you know about match racing. We had two boats coming down to the finish line. And so the leading boat had a penalty to take before they finished. And they did two jibes. And then the penalty downwind in match racing is to tack. They did two jibes, and we signaled the penalty was complete, mistakenly. That boat crossed the finish line and won the semi-final. And we realised, oh my god, what have we done? And there is no provision in the rules for changing your decision. Once you signalled it, then it's game over. The semi-final should have gone to the other boat, and as a result, there needed to be a tiebreaker because of our decision. The wind then disappeared, and we had to wait overnight for the tie-ripping match to happen. And I have never felt as sick in my life as when I was sitting thinking, oh my god, what have I done? And yeah, you just have to, that's just part of the job. Sometimes you will make a really big mistake, and I went to the sailors involved and apologised, and obviously at the time they were angry, but they then kind of understood and accepted it.
Which, yeah,
and thankfully the right boat went on to win the next day, but that is definitely one. It's a very useful anecdote for whenever I teach people to umpire now. When they make a mistake, I can say, well, it wasn't as bad as what I did years ago. So,
But also that everyone makes mistakes, and everyone is human. I do have one final question I want to ask you, though. You've done the Olympics, you've done SailGP. There seems to be one thing missing. Do you want me to say it? Or do you
what
know
is
where
it?
The question's
what
going?
Is it?
It seems to be the America's Cup. If the opportunity came up, would you go for it?
One day, yeah, it would be great to do to the Cup. I mean, I work with, so all of the umpires that are doing the next Cup are all SailGP umpires. So I work with them day in, day out. The America's Cup is a bit special because I don't think I could take 3 months off work to go and live in Barcelona as much as I would like to. So even if they had invited me, I think that would have been a limitation. It would be great to do it one day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's actually the chief umpire for the America's Cup is a very good friend of mine, and we worked together on some committees in world sailing, so I still feel like I'm sort of involved. We'll see.
Yeah. It would be needless to say, I'd be rooting for the little boy from Carrick to get close to the oldest trophy in sport. Chris, it's been a true pleasure. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crest of the Wave podcast. If you're interested in following in Chris's footsteps, head to the RAANI website and click on events. There, you'll find national judge and umpire courses to help you develop your skills and knowledge.